Well, hello and welcome to this edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine show. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. Glad to have you with us on this Monday. A little overcast out there, not sunny bright like it was all weekend, but still a great day out there as you listen to the Arts Magazine show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City where we cover the arts scene. We're part of the arts lineup here on KKFI. You have Arts Magazine on Monday. You have Arts Speak Radio with Maria on Wednesday. Sometimes other programmers kick in and do arts programming as well, all to cover the arts scene here in Kansas City right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM. KKFI. Great to have you here and joining with us. We're going to talk about two very interesting shows today. First, we're going to journey over to South Johnson County, over to the White Theater on the campus of the Jewish Community Center, where they are about to open in just a few days. I guess it already opened, didn't it? Because this is so you have a couple of shows under your belt as well. The performances will continue Thursday, the 10th, and then on Saturday the 12th, because they don't do a show on the Sabbath on Friday. People have asked me that over the years. Mm-hmm. Why no Friday shows over at the J? And it's always been that way.
Yeah.
And it's for religious reasons, of course. With us to talk about the show, Sunset Boulevard, put to music by Andrew Lloyd Webber. You've probably all seen the movie over the years. It's a very intriguing movie. Kind of what happens to one particular actress as they transition from the silent era to the talkies. Not all of the performers survived well doing that. And here to tell us about it, well, one, the actress Wendy Music, who plays the role of Norma Desmond, a challenge, much too young to play the role.
Thank you.
And Gloria Swanson played it. But let's do the magic of makeup and hair.
Absolutely.
And all that. I'm sure you look just perfect in the pictures you do.
Oh, thank you very much. I get to wear 5 wigs and 2 turbans in the show, so there's lots of drama in the appearance as well.
As we learn more about the lady, if you haven't seen the movie, you'll understand the need for the wigs in the show. Melissa Anderson is with us as well. She is with the J in the capacity of sales, marketing, events coordinator. She's going to answer those questions.
Absolutely. I'm here to talk about our fabulous season, which kicked off with our musical Sunset Boulevard, and we're so excited to be here. Thank you so much.
Now you had Dr. Ruth there not too long ago.
We had Dr. Ruth make a quick appearance. Yeah. In September.
Of course, it wasn't really Dr. Ruth. She's probably passed away.
She has not. She is still kicking it. On Twitter, she's active. Yeah.
Does she still talk about the sex?
Oh, yes, she does.
I remember her many talk show appearances and all the fun we had watching her.
Yeah.
I'm sure that was very, very successful.
It was a fabulous show.
Bet it was. Well, let's talk about the musical Sunset Boulevard to the music of Andrew Lloyd Webber. I've seen the movie many, many times. I've never seen the musical version. Did he write some lovely songs for the show?
Oh, my goodness. The songs are just hauntingly beautiful. They're complex, and the storytelling throughout it is just absolutely wonderful. I get to sing 2 songs that were great crossover hits that lots of artists have recorded, from Barbara Streisand, and the list goes on. But the signature songs, I would have to say, are With One Look and As If We Never Said Goodbye. And those are just moments that I'll treasure getting to perform on stage forever.
Oh, yeah, that's a great stage there.
It's a wonderful stage with amazing cast and crew, and it's just a fabulous place to do work.
Yeah, the first time I took a backstage tour over there, they said, we're going to show you how we fly in scenery.
And we do fly in scenery.
That you previously appeared there as Winifred in Mary Poppins at the J, which also played at Theater in the Park. So you got double work.
I got to do double work, and I got to work with the same creative staff. Tim Baer and Marcia Cannaday worked on both of those shows, and that's been a fantastic treat to get to work with them again.
Yeah, well, they flew in Mary Poppins for that one.
Yes.
Do they fly in anything for Sunset Boulevard?
I don't fly, but there's some amazing changes in the scenery as we go to diners, and we are in her epically beautiful house with a wonderful staircase that literally pops out of the stage. for you. We're also on Paramount Studios and at Artie's House, which is one of the characters on the show for a New Year's Eve party. So the changes between the scenery and the lighting that helps to make those beautiful are just wow moments. Mm-hmm. I think the first time the scene changes, my husband said you could hear the audience audibly go, Jason Chanley created such an amazing set that just, it keeps with the flow of the show. There's no stopping. It just keeps moving. And with the lights, and you are just transported into this magnificent world of Hollywood. He is truly gifted. He really is. Mm-hmm. It just, and as an actress, it just helps the scene come to life when you realize where you are. It just, it transports you and makes your job easier.
Yeah. Well, it was a challenge insofar as, yes, it had to be ornate, but ornate of a bygone era.
Oh, true. Mm-hmm. I don't think that there are homes that exist that were like the homes that you see in Sunset Boulevard. Not really. And then they had the challenge of a pool is a major centerpiece in this show, and how do you create that? And one of the interesting things about the Broadway musical that we have also incorporated into our show is that there's the use of a lot of projections that help you to transition from place to place, because there's a car chase scene, and in the Broadway musical that's done through a projection, and you see that in our show too, to help you kind of move that story along the way the movie did.
Yeah, it's a sad story in many ways. You pointed out in the interview you gave to the star, it's a sad, you felt sorry for her, and you do.
Oh, I think she's a very sympathetic character. You know, she began her life very early, almost as a child, and she married her first husband at a very early age, who was a director of one of her shows, and he stays with her and becomes her butler as she's gone through many other marriages, and her life just stood still. Everything else passed her by, the movies changed, the world changed, but she stayed in that silent film era and shut herself off from the rest of reality.
Yeah, she kind of lives in the past in that respect. Well, think about it, folks. You were a big star.
Oh, yeah.
And in the days of silent movies, because language was not a concern, those movies played all over the world. It is said that Francis X. Bushman, one of the big silent film stars, a male, was the biggest well-known name and face in the world at one time because of the silent movies that he did. So they were all very famous, and the irony of it all in this movie, the name of the character is Norma Desmond, but in the movie was played by Gloria Swanson, who was herself a silent film star. The gentleman you mentioned who stayed with her was her early director, Von Stroheim, was an actual silent film director. I'm not sure if he directed Gloria Swanson in movies, but at times the space between reality and the fantasy of the movie was very close.
They
must have all felt it as they were shooting.
Well, and in the film, Cecil B. DeMille makes a cameo appearance in the film, and he did, in fact, direct Gloria Swanson in reality, and his character is also in our musical. The musical follows the story exactly. There are a few scenes that you just don't see that are very minor scenes in transitioning the musical, but it really, if you're familiar with the movie, I think you will really appreciate the musical as well. It follows the story exactly and then just adds this lush, beautiful music and incredible orchestration to it.
So imagine if you were a child for the most part, which, and they started them very young then, a child star, as it were, extremely famous, world-renowned famous, and then suddenly when the movie's transitioned from silence to talkies, many of the performers didn't survive that change.
Right.
The voice wasn't exactly right. That was the story of some of the male stars, anyway. The high-pitched voice didn't translate well. Mm-hmm. And apparently things didn't go well for Norma Desmond either.
Correct.
In this context. So imagine going from that and then being put out to pasture, I guess is a bad way to say it, for that particular reason, how devastating that would be. Yeah. But in her mind, she has continued to live in that particular glamorous mindset, which affects the character in many ways.
It absolutely does. And with her former director, Max and former husband staying with her and staying on as her butler, he perpetuates that feeling. And in the movie, as well as in the musical, he's writing her thousands of fan letters every single day and mailing them to her so she believes in that reality as well. And he doesn't want her ever to believe that her star is faded.
Yeah, she lives as a recluse for the most part. That's how Joe accidentally, you mentioned the car chase, he accidentally stumbles across this mansion, so his car won't be repossessed. Life in Hollywood can be tough.
It can.
And he comes upon this mansion and this lady, and it seems to blow his mind in some respects.
I think he finds her very intriguing. He's a writer. He's played very beautifully by the wonderful Dalton Homolka in our show. And he's quite intrigued by her. He's curious, and he wants to find out more and what's happened to this woman. And he's down on his luck and thinks if he could make a few dollars and get a good story, that this might be a deal that might work out pretty well for him.
Yeah, well, she wants to write a script.
Absolutely.
Salome, as I recall.
Yes.
And she sees herself playing
Salome. That part, even though Salome is 16 at the time, and Norma is said to be about 50.
Yeah.
And so there's a little bit of your idea that her reality isn't quite sharp anymore. But she has, in fact, written this script, and one of the really entertaining lines, I think, of the show is she lifts this huge, enormous script out, and she tells him, I wrote this. And it's a very important picture, she says. And he says, it looks like six very important pictures. And so his challenge becomes as he's trying to trim the story down and cut it down. And she doesn't want any scene taken out that cuts away from her.
Uh-huh.
Everything needs to be about her. And he remarks, they don't want you in every scene, Norma. She says, of course they do. What else would they have come for?
Well, in her mind, the public wants to see her.
Absolutely.
And that's why they would come. Yeah, your biggest challenge in playing her, was it the age difference? You're much older than, or you're much younger. She is much older than you are in reality. And she being a very glamorous person, she dressed that way. Of course.
Absolutely.
She dressed and costumed herself for glamour.
Yes.
But glamour of a bygone time.
Right. I think the biggest challenge was just wanting to be as prepared as possible to be authentic and in the moment with my fellow performers, to help them to play their part the best that they could possibly play. You know, you had to prepare to be able to be very raw and very open, and go through a great progression throughout the show. And I think you had to be very careful about how much to unravel at a time for the audience. Because she's kind of crazy from the beginning, but she's a crazy that you like, and she's nice, and you do feel sorry for her. And then by the end, to see this total breakdown. So I guess traveling and transitioning to that point very carefully was probably the greatest challenge. And then just feeling like I could allow people to see me for who I was off stage, and then see the unlikable moments that Norma has on stage, and to be able to see the difference between myself and the character was important to me too.
She seems very needy at times as well, especially in some of the scenes with Joe.
Yes, I think she seems very needy, very self-centered and unaware of the people that are around her. But I think it's not that she's a mean person. I think that's what that career made her. Everything centered around her, and she was the most important thing. And then Max, again, perpetuates that feeling as time goes on. So I don't think it's that she's some terrible person that is trying to be rude to everyone. I think she really believes that reality centers around her.
You know, Ian, I remember thinking at the time, perhaps a different role in a different film, she probably might have been able to make a comeback. I mean, she was still good.
Yes, I think you're right. I think the right role, she could have done very well. And we can see that as we see that parallel between Gloria Swanson. Oh. She made that transition. And, you know, Sunset Boulevard, I think, goes down as one of her most outstanding performances ever, which is quite remarkable because she did have difficulty transitioning to talkies from silent films.
Yeah, and that is, if you've ever seen Dancing in the Rain, for instance, yeah. that is a much lighter take
yes.
on it. But the same thing,
it
the
is.
Translation, the changing, as it were, from mm-hmm. the silent era to the talking era, and not everyone survived. The voices just didn't match.
Right, which is kind of remarkable. Some of these, the voices didn't match, and yet these people could sing, and they had wonderful voices, but when you've watched someone on stage for years and years, and you've imagined what they sound like, I could see where it would be difficult for audiences to accept them. It's kind of like when you have a really great book and you go to see the movie, and you just don't like the movie because the interpretation that possibly the production team had for that movie is different than what you imagined in your mind.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Tell us about some of the co-stars in the show. With
well,
you.
I mentioned Dalton, and Dalton plays the role of Joe Gillis, and he's fantastic. I would be remiss if I didn't mention Megan Edmonds. She does a mm-hmm. fantastic job of playing Betty Schaefer, who is the younger female love interest of Joe. And then you get her counterpart that plays Artie, as well as many other characters. The very talented Matthew McDowell transitions between Artie and covering some other spots for us. My wonderful Max in the show is played by John Edmonds. And I have to tell you, just as Max is there for Norma's every need, mm-hmm. he is the kindest person. And when I turn around and look for something, he already has it for me on stage. He's fantastic. And then as you go from there, Cecil B. DeMille is an iconic character, and that's played by the very talented Don Leonard. And he's made many appearances on stage at the J, I believe. Mm-hmm. And then we go, and we have just a fantastic ensemble. Their sound in the songs is incredible, and they're so talented. And that's made up of Deshaun Young, Wendy Bouchette, Whitney Armstrong, Renee Blinn, Natalie Crane, which is our only high school student, and she's incredibly talented, a great talent. Lindsay Day, my good friend Sarah Montoya, who was in Mary Poppins with me, appears in the show. Jake Swaney, Delano Mendoza is in the show. He's great. Ray Zarr, love Ray. He's a very encouraging person and very active in the theater community. And then we even have a little cameo from Scott Slobotsky. He does a voiceover for us. As you remember in the movie, I believe she references Hawkeye, who's on set. He does the voice of Hawkeye for us in this show.
Just think about it. In silent movies, the lighting guy was very important.
Absolutely.
Especially when you got your close-up.
Mm-hmm.
And Norma Desmond got a lot of close-ups.
And he sets up one of my favorite songs in the show with his lines. So that's right before I get to sing As If We Never Said Goodbye. So.
Well, that's a very important
yes.
cameo.
It is an important
well.
Cameo.
Yeah, some of the character actors in the show are very important to the show. The parts might not be big, but they're integral into understanding her circumstances. I hesitate to bring it up. I don't want to give away too much, but there's a kind of a miscommunication. The studio calls her, and this only feeds mm-hmm. her slight delusion.
Absolutely. She believes she's coming back to the studio because they love the script that she brought them.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, that's not why they have brought her back, and I won't tell you why they haven't. But that realization, actually, Max and Joe realized that before she does, and that impact is quite significant, and it turns things into a bit of a tragic tailspin.
It really does. It's a character, you understand her.
Yes.
You understand her motivations. You also feel sorry for her on a certain level. You just wish that somebody could have talked her into maybe a different kind of role in a different film. Comebacks are possible.
You know, absolutely.
The generic actors are very popular these days.
Yeah.
The lady in Titanic, for instance,
also
went way back to that era, and she was perfect in the role she had. But She had to be Salome. She had to be the star. And the focus had to be on her.
Yes. Yeah. And it's very interesting because there are lots of people who come into this acting business sort of late in the game or transition from something else. And there are amazing, wonderful roles that are not the starlet. And
Performances continue this Thursday the 10th. They continue then Saturday the 12th, both at 7:30. A matinee on Sunday afternoon the 13th at 2 o'clock p.m. Then three more performances the next week. Thursday the 17th, Saturday the 19th, both 7:30 performances. And a Sunday afternoon matinee at 2 o'clock p.m. at the White Theater of the Jewish Community Center that is located at 5801 West 115th Street, Overland Park, Kansas. If you need to MapQuest things, the zip code is 66211. You can see the Sprint campus from the parking lot of the Jewish Community Center.
Yep.
And the theater, of course, I called it the J, but that's your marketing has changed, Melissa. You call it the J now.
It's the J. It's the White Theater at the J.
Yes.
Yeah, and we're located just right there in South Johnson County, right across from Town Center. So you can easily come out, grab dinner, and then come see the show. We're right across the street. So you can make a whole evening of it.
Yeah, the number to call for more information, 913-327-8054, or on the web at thejkc.org. You can also get their ticket arrangements finished online as well.
Absolutely, all online, or you can always call our box office or simply come by and say hi. We're happy to see you.
And we only have a few minutes, but then you have a lot of events coming up, a Jewish Film Festival coming up.
Yes, we just announced our Kansas City Jewish Film Festival, which will kick off January 8th through the 22nd. And we have six spectacular films that we'll be introducing for that. And then just following that is Lost in Yonkers, which is a Neil Simon and Tony Award-winning play. After that, we'll have Open Stage, which we will have a lot of dance companies throughout Kansas City bringing original choreography to the stage. Including Kansas City Ballet, too, will be joining us. Following that, we'll have Fahrenheit 451. And then wrapping out our season this summer is Beauty and the Beast, which we will, again, be partnering with Theater in the Park.
Yeah. Well, so, and that means, for those of you who don't remember, they do a week or two at the J.
Yeah, we do our 3 weeks at the J, and then they go out to the park and present there as well.
You did Mary Poppins last summer, a big difference doing it inside and then outside?
There is a big difference in doing it inside and outside, and I thoroughly enjoyed both. Someone said it's a completely different show when you go outside, and I believe that. There are wonderful benefits. It's a thing that I would actually love to see them both, inside and outside, because I think you get a completely different aspect of the show. It was a joy.
Yeah, they did some great things at Theater in the Park. I remember they sunk the Titanic more than a few years ago. I remember that. The boat actually went down there on the stage.
Wow.
It tipped and went down. Mm-hmm. That was a lot of fun to see that as well. But they have a great facility at the J, as I said earlier.
Oh, yes, fabulous. 500-seat theater. It's such a beautiful theater, and the shows that we produce there, not to brag, but they are spectacular. I am so amazed at what they put on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a lot of things coming up probably in the future as well.
Oh, yes. I mean, all of our fabulous stuff is coming up just after the new year, and then we'll be announcing our 13th season in May.
It's a nice mix of dramas and musicals as well, but usually a musical in the summer.
Yeah, typically we'll do a musical in the fall and a musical in the summer. So they're kind of cappers to our season with some lovely plays in between.
And if they need more information, they can go to thejkc. And you have to put the in there.
Yes.
TheJKC.org for more information.
Absolutely.
Or call this box office number. That's probably more geared for tickets than questions.
We'll take it all. Okay. But yes, all of our information is on our website and easy to access there.
913-327-8054. The Jewish Community Center, of course, is located at 5801 West 115th Street, Overland Park, zip code 66211. And when you map questions, they often ask for the zip code. And that's if you don't know whether it's Overland Park or Leewood, all you need is the zip code.
All you need
it'll
zip
correct
code
for you in doing doing that. But the Jewish Community Center and the fabulous White Theater, and the Whites, I guess, donated a lot of the money to go towards
Lewis
the theater.
Lewis and Shirley White, yes, they're fabulous donors of ours. And we love all of our patrons. They're just so wonderful and giving and supportive of all of the arts that we do there.
It's a beautiful theater, up to the state-of-the-art facility.
Absolutely. It's fantastic. And Jason Chanley, I'll mention him again, but he just runs such a great operation there in the theater.
Okay. Anything you want to talk about Norma before you leave us?
It's kind of a dream role. Mm-hmm. It really is. I just know how very lucky I am. I know I have an outstanding cast. When you hear them sing, you're just in awe. Really. Each of them individually, whether they have a small ensemble part to some of the bigger parts in the show, they're absolutely top-notch, talented people, many who have degrees in music or dance, and they're fantastic people to be surrounded by. As you mentioned, Jason and the entire staff at the J, Julia, my goodness.
Julia and her costume.
The costumes are beyond unbelievable.
Oh, especially yours.
It's a fashion show on the stage. It's amazing.
I feel like a Barbie doll that I get to dress up in. Literally, they're just clothes I couldn't even dream of wearing. And it's just the most incredible people to be surrounded with. I didn't mention Guy Gardner earlier, and has done the choreography for this show and just also been a really integral part of the creative process. And I just can't speak enough about the people that I'm surrounded with every day. They're a joy to be around, and it makes performing an absolute delight.
Yeah, well, it's a wonderful show. Sunset Boulevard, just think of the ironies of the movie. A former silent film actress played Norma Desmond. Max was played by a former silent film director. Cecil B. DeMille, who actually directed in that era, was in the movie as
well. Yes, he was.
So it was an important movie in Hollywood at the time for many reasons. Of course, Hollywood likes to make movies about Hollywood, so that's not really surprising. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you so much.
Wendy Music, who plays the role of Norma Desmond, and Melissa Anderson, the sales and marketing and events coordinator over at the J. Thank you for being with us. Sunset Boulevard performances continue this Thursday the 10th at the J. TheJKC.org or 913-327-8054. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Michael.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we have much more to tell you about when we return. You're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI 90.1 FM. And welcome back to the Arts Magazine show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. We go from the past to more present, I suppose you say, but still an eerie show to talk about. The City Theater of Independence is presenting Ravenscroft, and it will open on, I guess it already opened. Performances will continue this Friday, November 11th at 8 o'clock p.m., this Saturday the 12th at 8 o'clock p.m., and Sunday the 13th, a matinee at 2 o'clock p.m. at the City Theater of Independence. They call it the Powerhouse Theater out there because it used to be Powerhouse. City Theater is located at 201 North Dodgen. That's essentially the intersection of Truman and Nolan Roads in Independence. And here to tell us about the eerie show that they have coming up. Oh, this was a dark and wintry night. You know, as we said in our promo, Michael Masterson is with us. He is the director. He has an MFA in theater arts, has directed for City Theater, Encore Theater, at the annual Playwrights Festival. What have I missed, Michael?
Nothing. I've been very busy in the last couple of years, both acting and directing, but those are the places I've been directing recently. I'm really very happy to stay around the Sermon Center and the multiple theater companies that live in that location. It's been lots of fun.
I know your wife occasionally acts in things as well. Do you yourself?
Yes. Taking a small break in the acting side of things now. I'll pick up something in the spring. And my wife is actually the stage manager for Ravenscroft. She's taking a small break. She's worked three shows in a row as an actress and decided to back me up and support me as assistant director and stage manager, and she's doing a fabulous job getting this show on its feet and running smoothly, considering we've had some illness rampant through the cast. But everybody's getting better, and they still presented three very strong performances this past weekend. We expect even better the upcoming weekend.
Yeah, your wife was also in The Frontiers, which played this summer, as was our other guest, Stephanie Flanagan. She was in Frontiers. She's been in a number of shows over the years. Boy, I've seen you as far back. Women hate it when you do this to them. But I remember seeing you at Northgate at New Directions, I believe. Did I see you at New Directions and other places as well?
Yes. Been quite an adventure.
This summer you were in Frontiers at the National Frontier Trails Museum. Played many roles in a show called Frontiers. Eight different roles. That's always hard. Come up with a new personality for each one.
It was exciting, though. It was quite a challenge.
I'll bet so. And Megan Reed is with us. She plays the role of Gillian in the show. Gillian Ravenscroft. Do things happen to you in the show?
I think a lot happens to Gillian, but I think Gillian's also happening to a lot of people as well. So she's a very interesting character to play for sure.
Yeah, well, it was billed as a dark mystery, a mysterious and wintry night, so to speak. So I should turn to the director, Michael Masterson, to tell us a little bit about the synopsis of Ravenscroft.
Well, the publishing company advertises it as a gothic thriller, and it's actually a comedy mystery.
Uh-huh.
The gothic part is because it's set in 1905 England, out in the middle of nowhere. Well, we've gentrified that by making it anywhere out in the middle of nowhere. It could be here in the United States. It could be in Kansas, because we have wind that blows through while the action of the play is going on. And it's very, very important that they have these five women who live at this mansion, this manor house, and in comes a police inspector to find out what happened to the groomsman, Patrick Rourke, the general handyman for the house. And Patrick has fallen down the main staircase and broken his neck, and the police inspector has to come in and find out what actually happened. So it's his search for the truth that drives the play, and come to find out that none of the five ladies are actually forthcoming with the truth. And so his interviews with each one of them get to be more and more complex and complicated and confusing, but it's all presented very clearly to the audience to make them confused and let them think, okay, what did I just hear? Did I miss something the first time? Yes, I did. There's something else. There's another piece of information. Wow, okay, let's see what else is happening. And amongst all of that, there's funny, comedic moments, because there are very talented performers saying these wonderful lines and connecting with what's going on. So we're stuck in a manor house in the middle of nowhere as the snow is coming down and sticking everyone inside. They can't go anywhere. And Inspector Ruffing is fighting his way to find out what's going on. And it's a wonderful 2-hour and 10-minute journey, and then a 15-minute intermission to go along with it. So it's just a very enjoyable evening of entertainment when you come right down to it. It's a lovely second act where everything wraps up and comes together. And the ladies are arguing and fighting, and there's attempted murder going on between the cook and the housekeeper, and there's wonderful, wonderful, funny moments.
So, see, a show like this would be a challenge for you as a director. Gothic and scary, yet with comedic moments. Actors might tend to over-exaggerate sometimes the comedic moments. How do you direct them through this? Tell them, you must play this very straight for it to really be funny.
Well, it's like a farce. You have to commit to absolutely believing in what you're doing, and the audience will then flow along with you as the show progresses. So for the actors, it's more We're going to be moving from place to place. You're having a conversation, and the conversation starts off a little low and inquisitive and then gets a little strident as you try and figure out what piece of information is important and now where do you go from there with that piece of information. So a lot of our rehearsal period was getting the flow of the actors around each other and around the stage so that they could have conversations, so that we were not going over the top and making it inappropriate high energy just to get a laugh. The laugh is from the lines. The laugh is from the situations of them relating to each other. So the directing side of thing was, okay, where's the climax within the sentence? Where's the peak within the beat? Where can we emphasize what word sets this off so that the audience will understand what you're trying to get across? It's been very fun because all the actors are very adaptable and very hardworking, and they come in like blank slates and say, fill me up, and I'm ready to turn what our conversation is into action. And so it's a walking and talking show, and so we've added action in there to make it lively and to make it real. And they're doing a marvelous job having that interaction with each other.
Perfect topic. Wonderful. Perfect topic for a term paper. Is that what you wrote?
I'll have to go back to school to do that. It might be worth a PhD.
Let's look at these characters and how they fit in. Stephanie Flanagan plays the role of Mrs. French. How does she fit into this story, Stephanie?
I am the housekeeper. But I grew up in the house.
I started out as a housemaid, probably in my early teens. So I know the house inside and out. I know everyone in the house, all the comings and goings. It's really great to play her just because she knows so much and is very in tune with what is happening or what might have happened.
Sometimes knowing too much can be dangerous.
It is a little dangerous at times. I have to say that. Yeah, knowledge isn't always power.
Yeah, not always. Tell us about the costuming and all of that.
The costuming is a lot of fun. Very Victorian. All the ladies are in corsets.
You have no experience with that.
A little too much, maybe. it's just wonderful. Wonderful just being in that place, in that time. Something else that is really great is we are all on stage the whole time. Even if we're not in the light, we're all seated around. So we get a show every night, too. We get to see everyone else's interactions with each other and how the story unfolds and where we're going. And it's just terrific.
Is Mrs. French suspected of doing something nefarious in the show?
I think everyone gets a finger pointed at them throughout the show. But I won't say. Okay. Won't give everything away.
Megan Reed plays the role of Gillian Ravenscroft. Tell us about Gillian, how she fits in.
Gillian is the daughter of Mrs. Ravenscroft and the late Mr. Ravenscroft. So she grew up in the house, and she is familiar with everyone within the house except for the inspector that comes to visit after the death of Patrick. She is a very precocious child. She is definitely a modern woman in 1905. She kind of has her own way of doing things and motivations of how to get there. So she just likes to have fun and kind of enjoy the journey of getting towards the end of the story.
Yeah, how are you decked out costume-wise in this show?
Well, I am actually the only character in the show that has a costume change. So I begin the first act in a corset and a full petticoat, which is interesting because I've never worn that before on stage.
So somebody can tell you.
It's a learning experience for sure. Especially sitting up and sitting down, and it's definitely really fun. Second act, I am in a very long nightgown, which is very interesting because it's a very physical role. So learning kind of how to move around stage on that has been interesting as well.
Yeah, something nefarious must happen. What are some of the other characters, and how do they fit in with these two?
Well, in the house you have Mrs. Ravenscroft, who is a lusty young widow. Her husband died 3 months ago, falling down the main staircase.
Patrick. Yes. A complete accident, of course.
Yes, it is an accident. The idiosyncrasies of that, you'd really have to come to the play. But Mrs. Ravenscroft is... you can see the maturity, but there is a lot of similarity between herself and Gillian. You can see that Gillian is her mother's daughter, because there's a link in there with their responses and their attitudes. We also have Marcy Kleiner, the beautiful governess from Vienna, who has come in to help Gillian get away from her fantasy life to more realistic life. And she has a little secret as well that she brings to the situation. And the inspector delves into that secret and tries to use it against her as he accuses her of actually committing murder of Patrick. And last but not least, we have a gorgeous young lady named Hannah Bazzona, who's playing Dolly the maid. And Dolly is the sweetest, simplistic character, and Hannah just owns her. And she is so sweet and funny, and she just makes everything perky when you think, okay, I've heard the questioning from Inspector Ruffing. Now it's like, okay, you're beating me over the head with it. And then Dolly comes in, and all of a sudden you're just rolling in the aisles because she's funny. And she's just learning how to get through, and she does a great job. But our main driving force to this whole thing is Inspector John Ruffing, played by Dave Fullerton, who comes in with a little agenda. He is a disgraced police inspector from a large city, and he's been transferred to this small town in the middle of nowhere. And what he wants to do is find the truth of the death of Patrick. And his truth is that somebody murdered Patrick. Mm-hmm. And if he can discover the murder, he can move out of this small town and get back to the city again. But throughout the play, he keeps running into barriers put up by all five of the women. Because more and more as he inquires about the murder aspect, it still keeps coming back. This was an accident. This was not a murder, but it sounds like a murder. And I believe it's a murder, he says. And then we just keep finding out. Each of the ladies has their own information about it, and it makes it convoluted. And then he ultimately comes out with the end result of the play, and it is not what you expect.
Oh.
There is a twist at the end of the play that is well worth waiting for, and it will knock you back in your seat, and you will just sit there and go, I never saw that coming. And the ladies don't allude to any of that until it happens. And then all of a sudden, boom, you go, wow, that's cool. I like that piece of information. That's a nice twist from the playwright.
Yeah, it reminds me of some ways of The Mousetrap. Agatha Christie's The Mousetrap. Mm-hmm. It sounds like there are a lot of similarities.
Some similarities to it. It's a detective fiction, and you want to find out what happened and go through the process of discovering a way to get an end result, positive end result. But at the same time... yes, it's very similar to Agatha Christie, and I like it. And I directed Mousetrap in 2013, so you know this is kind of the next step for me. I like it.
When I first did The Mousetrap, way back when, I won't say how far back, the director didn't let us see the last 10 pages.
Oh.
Didn't want us to know. Thought it would affect the interpretation of our characters.
Yeah, and then, of course, your last 10 pages, you have to memorize them very quickly so that you can get on with it, don't you? You got to know how the play ends at
some
point.
It was very important for her up to a certain... Etta Marie Carlisle, if anyone knows her. Yeah. It was very important for her that we not change the characters knowing who would do it, because it was another one where you didn't see the end coming, mm-hmm. and that makes it all the more intriguing for the audience. If you're talking about your inspector character, he has to ask himself, in my opinion anyway, is it better to be a big fish in a small pond or a small fish in a big pond? There are advantages and disadvantages to being both.
Well, he has no desire to be a big fish in a small pond. His desire is to be a big fish in a big pond because he is very good at his job. But he did something wrong. And Gillian is perceptive enough to, in the play, point it out that he must have done something wrong. Why else is he not? Why else is he here? And it is a slap in the face to him, and he changes the subject and moves on. And you know, his desire is to be the best police officer he can be.
Yeah, the challenge, I suppose, would be lighting effects, perhaps sound effects in the show as well.
We do. We add some sound to give you the idea that you're trapped out in the middle of nowhere. I love the idea of being in Kansas surrounded by wheat fields in a house that's a two-story, three-story house, and the wind just whips through and it makes all these wonderful sounds. And then because it's gothic, we have a lighting effect that we run periodically through the play. The fun thing for listening at intermission and after the show has always been people going, "Why do you think those lights came on like that? Does that mean that they're lying when the lights come on? Or does that mean that they're telling the truth when the lights come on? When the lights shift like that, I didn't quite understand it. But I thought it was very intriguing." It was a very good conversation I had with this lady. And, the lighting effects are there for a specific reason that I'm not going to reveal.
Sure.
Because it's always nice to hear what other people think about it.
Yeah. You know? Some people I have heard go by what the actor is wearing, the color. Mm-hmm. A certain color scheme indicates certain things to them as the audience. And you probably get a kick out of that because they might guess right, but the fact that they're reading so much into it shows that they're really on a deeper level with it.
And they're connecting. They're paying attention. They're involved in what's going on. They're listening because then they wonder, okay, you're wearing this particular costume, why? You're wearing that particular color, why? This shifts in sound. The pre-show music, the intermission music, the connection with the lights. It's just so nice when an audience goes, "I was thinking the whole way through, and I really liked what was going on," instead of going, "Oh, I was so bored and I fell asleep and I didn't really want to be there. My wife dragged me along, or my husband dragged me along, or I know somebody in the show and I'm just here because, I know them." No. Our audiences have been very, very attentive and very perceptive and very responsive to the comedy.
Yeah.
We're very, very happy to have the folks that we had come see the show so far. We're looking forward to the next, like you said, three performances. Bring more people in, enjoy it, and laugh. And, it is a comedy thriller.
Friday the 11th at 8 o'clock p.m., Saturday the 12th at 8 o'clock p.m., a matinee on Sunday the 13th at 2 o'clock p.m., and it's inside, so you can make it just as dark and eerie during the daytime as you can at night, which is the challenge, of course. Stephanie's character is Mrs. French. The fact that she's wearing a corset, would the audience interpret that as meaning she's more uptight, that she's hiding something?
No, I don't think so.
No?
It's very period. It is very much of the day. So, no.
What about Gillian?
I would hope not.
Anything that gives anything away with Gillian?
I think Gillian gives everything away, but it's not quite what you think it might be.
Does she have any tattoos or anything?
Oh, no. No. I'm not quite sure if she's the tattoo type. But.
Gillian is in 1905, the character that actually would be more comparable to 2016. She is a modern woman in an older time frame, and she is prescient. She knows things. She feels things. She gives you all or nothing. And in Megan's case, it's all. She just lays it all out there for you, and she's very perceptive. And so it's a wonderful opportunity to see a fantastic job done by a very talented young lady. In Stephanie's case, she comes out there and she is an anchor to the piece. She is the one who has been taking control and running this household for a while. And when she comes out, she just wants to get the inspector out, and she doesn't want him around. We want to wrap it up, take all the pressure off of the family, and just get him away because it was an accident. But she also has her little secret that goes with things. So each one of them has a secret,
And Inspector Ruffing slowly but surely pulls the secrets out until we get to Act Two, and then we wrap it all up.
That's one thing you don't want to do with detectives in a good mystery is hurry them out. That only makes them more suspicious. Makes them more likely to hang around for a while.
Well, yes, you want to throw a red herring in periodically. You want to make an inquiry that doesn't quite connect with everything. And for each one of these actresses that are playing against him, they look at him and they give the dialogue from the play, and he does not have any idea. They give away nothing until it's time. Yeah. Very talented ladies.
Yeah, more information can be had at their website, citytheaterofindependence.org, and the number to call to ask questions or make arrangements for tickets, that sort of thing, is 816-325-7367. The Powerhouse Theater, part of the Sermon Center, in Independence, Missouri. Actually houses three theater groups: City Theater of Independence, the Encore Theater Group, which is older folks for the most part, and then the Children's Theater Group as well. All share that facility, all part of the Powerhouse Foundation, I guess, of the city in Independence.
Right, and we're on this is our second show of our 37th season, and so we're a little bit of a unknown quantity, actually. Being around for 37 years, there's quite a few people that are still unaware that we're there. They see the Sermon Center as a gymnasium and an entity that provides workout spaces and meeting spaces. But the three theater groups have been around for quite some time, and we're continuing to build the audience as we become let people more aware that we're there. I would like to add that our ticket prices are relatively low compared to other theaters in town. For good quality performances, you're going to pay $12 for adults. $12 for a ticket.
And we're not supposed to mention ticket prices for the current show. No, because we're a not-for-profit station. But you can take Michael's word for it that it is a reasonable cost, and you can find that cost easily on their website, yes, citytheaterofindependence.org, or if you call and leave a message at 816-325-7367. A fun time is probably had by the performers as well as the audience, it sounds like.
Yeah.
In the City Theater of Independence production of Ravenscroft. Performances continue this Friday and Saturday, both evenings, and a Sunday afternoon matinee on Sunday. The Sermon Center in Independence is located at 201 North Dodgen, which you can easily remember it as being the corner of Truman and Nolan Roads in Independence, where a lot of things meet in Independence. Near the historic Independence Square. I want to thank you all for being with us today. Michael Matheson, the director, has directed probably for each of the entities, City Theater, Encore Theater. Have you directed the Children's Theater yet?
Not yet with children.
Not yet? And also was involved in the Playwright Festival this summer, which they have, I guess, they have plans to do that every summer?
Yes. We already have put together our theme for next summer, which is actually no theme. We're actually asking playwrights to submit a 10 to 15 minute play with no specific theme to follow, but we do have furniture parameters that will be available to them. It will be on the website a little more in the fall. We start accepting submissions for the plays on January 1st. And then we'll go up at the last weekend of July for four performances. It'll be Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, the last weekend of July. And this will be our eighth season of the Playwright Festival. And it's a fundraiser for City Theater of Independence. And we have drawn good crowds over the years. And we get plays submitted from around the world. So we sit down with our committee and we go through everything that's submitted and we choose what we feel are the best eight plays to present to our audiences.
Yeah. Thank you for being here, Michael. Stephanie Flanagan plays the role of Mrs. French. Thank you for coming.
Thank you, sir.
And Megan Reed, who plays the role of Gillian All in the City Theater of Independence production of Ravenscroft. Performances continue beginning this Friday the 11th at 8 o'clock p.m. Thanks so much for being with us. The Jazz Insider is coming up next. Yes, indeed. Sam Wiseman will be here. He'll play some of the finest jazz you'll hear anywhere in town. Jazz from 1 to 3, the blues from 3 to 6, right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that cross in the road, I'm Michael Hogue.